This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. I'm Roshan Kunnison and you're listening to Ring It In Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Now, if some of you remember, in March, I spoke to Noor Hisham Hussain about EPF's Belanjawan Ko Expenditure Guide. It's been about 6 weeks since then, and my question to all of you is, has it helped? Did you use it to reevaluate how you spend your money, or did it help you in any way? Please let us know on Twitter at BFM Radio, or you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Now, to follow up on that conversation, I have in the studio with me Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts and licensed financial planner with Principal Asset Management. Joyce has a lot of thoughts about this subject, about Belanjawan Ko, and we're going to hear some of it today. Welcome to the show, Joyce.
Hi, Roshan. I'm glad to be back, as always.
So, Joyce, before we get into the what do we do with a guide, can I just get your first impressions of the Belanjawan Ko Expenditure Guide?
I really liked it. In fact, I was one of the panel speakers when they launched this Belanjawan Ko. I felt that it is a very, very good start, since this is the first time such survey results have been done, and it's fantastic, because a lot of us have an inertia issue with our finances. They need to awaken and be aware of, you know, where their money is going.
Yeah, I think that was what was most important from the Belanjawan Ko Expenditure Guide. So even in my conversation with Hisham at that point, we talked about how this was a starting point and it wasn't perfect. There's a lot of things that you can disagree with this guide. Mm-hmm. You may disagree about the allocations for a household or expenditure or social expenses. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, we all need a guide. And the hope was that this survey would provide at least a platform or a reference point to get started. And my hope is that some people have gotten started, at least taking a look at the expenditure in the last 6 weeks.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. It's not just a guide for the sake of having a guide, but yeah, to act on it.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? You can have a guide and you can have instructions and you can have all sorts of tips and advice, mm-hmm. but do you act upon it? And I know you have some thoughts on this, right?
Yeah, well, I've always mentioned that managing money is 20% head knowledge and 80% character. So acting on it is important, and that forms your character. Now, how do you build a character with regards to your money? It is actually practicing it, acting on it, practicing it. Just it's like a religion. You need to look at this thing called your personal finance every day or every other week, and give it focus. Then building the habits and creating that character in the end. So it's not just head knowledge.
Yeah, and it starts with one, right? It starts with one habit that you kickstart, and hopefully that builds into other things. And in my personal opinion, I think habits compound. If you start one, eventually it gives you momentum to build more over time. So one of the first ones I implemented in my life was the, and I think you've said this before, income minus savings equals expenses. Taking out that 10% or 15% right out of the start of your salary gives you at least that constraint about, okay, this is how much money I can spend. And that savings amount goes into a separate account where I can't touch it.
Exactly. And you're right about the expense being taken out as the result of saving, rather than having savings as a result of expense, of your expenses. And the problem with us here, especially in Klang Valley, is that we think we can't save because everything else is so expensive. So it's always, you know, it's even become a psychological issue that it is, I can't save because everything's expensive. I can't do anything else with my money. Why don't we just change that to I can save? And I'm sure you and I have done that before, Roshan, right? We have sacrificed certain things that that eventually built that habit and the character in us, and therefore that accumulated savings.
Oh, definitely. I think it ideally, of course, we don't want to sacrifice anything. We don't want to have to stop drinking coffee or certain things. But push comes to shove, you've got to decide what your priorities are when it comes to your personal finance. And if savings is one of your priorities, then you have to set it aside immediately. And then from there, work with what you have for the rest of the expenses. And no one's telling you to save 10% or 15% at the start. You can start from whatever and build up from there. Well, Joyce, what are the other habits that you suggest people start?
Savings is actually a social thing. Mm-hmm. I've also said before that it is it is also who you actually mingle with. Who are your friends? Are they the ones who are actually like making you spend a lot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think that they are not helping you very much in that area, perhaps have a different set of friends. Yeah, do different things. Even, you know, have... well, knowledge is one thing, but as we said, is practice. So one is to know who your social circle is. Secondly, is really to have an organizational mindset with regards to your personal finances. A lot of us are not organized. That's why I like the Belanjawan Ku, because it gives you not just a guide, but it helps you to organize according to some of the very basic things and to have a reasonable lifestyle in Klang Valley, because that's what the research is about.
It gives you a reference point, which a lot of us don't have, right?
Exactly.
It's very hard to start saving and budgeting if you don't know a decent basis. And that's what this gives us.
Exactly. And it's not perfect, as we said, but it's a good start to kick you out of your comfort zone and your inertia. So, but there are many things that happens with regards to money. You know, it's a whole psychology thing. How do you get out of, you know, what your friends or your circle, your social circle is doing versus, you know, your own personal goals? So getting organized is the first thing to do with your personal finances.
What do you suggest there? What would the best way to get organized, in your opinion? Where should we start with that?
Well, start with whatever that you have. I think it's important to list down income is something that we all know, right? And we are interested in. List down, in terms of savings, list down what your expenses are. And with an Excel worksheet, you can actually do a allocation of how much do you spend or overspend. It's just like any other budget, you know. Mm-hmm. What are the trends? Maybe for the last 6 months, what are the trends? I mean, you can just put up a spreadsheet and see where have you been spending and organize your expenses into categories. And where are the categories that are discretionary, which you can do away with, and which are the ones that are basic? During my time, my discretionary expense was to buy a car, and mm-hmm. I didn't buy a car.
Okay.
But maybe it's different this round. Maybe it's not about having a car or not. It is important that everyone has a car. But what type of car?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So, and what type of every other things, like clothes, shoes. So get organized by listing out your expenses, knowing how much you spent in percentage with regards to a certain area, categorize them, get an allocation of expenses. And one step further, look at your trend. I mean, that's just a very good start.
Yeah, I think that is so important. Just getting started with the logging of expenses, whether it's on pen and paper or Excel sheet or you have an app, just doing it, keeping it as simple as possible so you don't get confused and give up. I think that's very important, because that's how I struggled at the start. I would try and be too perfect with my expenses and then eventually just give up because it got too complicated.
Yeah.
Just categorizing very simply and just keeping a log for 6 months gives you such a powerful trend analysis of where your money's going. And when you know that, then you at least know where you can cut, because you don't know where to start cutting if you don't know where your money is going.
Exactly. And I read a book before by Marie Kondo. I'm not sure whether you've read it before.
I actually spoke to Yap Ming Hui last week about Marie Kondoing your personal finances. So this is quite funny that you bring this up.
Right, yes. Because it's about, does this thing give you joy? That's what she said.
Yep.
If it doesn't give you joy and you hold it to your heart, doesn't give you joy, then you actually discard that thing. So that is the art of tidying up, right? So it's the same thing with your finances.
Exactly. We're going to continue this discussion in just a little bit. This is Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, thanks for staying with us here on Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. Today, we're talking about personal finances following up from the Belanjawan Ku expenditure guide that was launched in early March, and talking about the different ways we can simplify our finances and how we can apply a guide to our own personal lives. Because a guide is just a guide until you start acting on it. Today in the studio, I have Joyce Chua, CEO of Success Concepts and licensed financial planner with Principal Asset Management. So Joyce, a little while ago, we were talking about how we can simplify our budgets. And when it comes to these sort of things, right, sometimes we allocate too many resources to a particular side. Mm. And before the show, we were talking about how a lot of us put too much when it comes to property.
Yes, that's the trend ever since the property boom. right, over allocation into an illiquid asset like properties can be detrimental to your personal finance, personal health, personal financial health, that is.
Well, really.
Exactly, because it can be such a crunch on your cash flow that one can actually be quite depressed about being in that state.
Yeah, because I think the big part here is that sometimes we confuse that we think all assets are equal when they're not. Some are more liquid and some are very, very illiquid. And properties are very illiquid.
Yes.
Just because your net value or your net assets are now higher, that doesn't mean you can turn that into cash.
Exactly. You just can't sell the bedrooms only, right?
Yeah, you can't break up a property and sell it in pieces. And you can't expect to sell it overnight, especially now when we're in this oversupply.
Yes.
So, Joyce, what happens here when we've put too much of our money or our budgets into property?
Because especially with properties, you're taking a mortgage loan, and with the fact that interest will stay stable for now, interest rates staying stable, and a property that doesn't get rented or sold eats into your cash flow, because interest can be expensive, and it is something which you're not stretching your assets. So I have seen individuals, young, middle-aged, older ones, who have got into the property frenzy, and they've over-allocated assets into this class called real estate and property. And then they get into a situation where they are not able to rent or sell, and having their cash flow being crunched, and therefore having to take desperate measures like perhaps refinance their current home or get a bad debt, for example, maybe overextending their credit in on their credit lines with a credit card or some other term loans. And that's bad.
Yeah, I've always been a bit not skeptical about property, but very cautious when it comes to this, because when you look at your finances overall, property can be a big concentration risk. You're putting a lot of eggs in one basket for especially if you're doing property as an investment and not a place to live, it's a lot of your assets concentrated in one area. And one thing we always talk about on Ring & Sense is diversifying your portfolio and your risk.
Absolutely.
So when all your eggs are in one basket and you haven't even paid this off, if, let's say, there's an oversupply of property, you can't even rent your investment property for a certain level, let alone sell it. And that can be a really heavy burden for those of us who haven't planned appropriately for it.
That's right. And I've heard stories where they are not able to rent a particular property. So what they do is they actually break up that that unit into many more rooms, maybe not legally, but to break it up to many more rooms so that they can actually rent it easier and at the same time have many, many tenants, which can be a headache as well. So a property is great, but it's not always that great if you have over-allocated on it. Now, there are people who ask me, whether should I buy a property now? It's very expensive. Should I wait? And there are those who are more conservative. But I think if it's for your home and it's to build a family, then by all means, buy a property that your heart desires, right?
Within your budget, of course.
Yes, within your budget. And we were talking, Roshan, that why don't we... I mean, if you're an investor, why don't you get into REITs, which is more liquid?
Yeah, we are so skittish about you want to get into the real estate market, into investment property. There are better ways, more liquid ways to do it. And like you mentioned, REITs are one of them. Now, not all REITs are created equal. Be sure to do your research into that. But it's a good way, if you believe in real estate and property and all of that, that it's a good way to get your exposure to that sector.
Absolutely. I am a property investor myself, but I watch very well my asset allocation. Holding power is one thing, and that actually leads to the fact, to the question whether should we actually take a loan on property or not.
Yeah, that's a big question, right?
Yes.
I mean, we all have to take a loan on property. Not all of us have the... Not many of us have the means to just drop a whole lot of cash onto a house.
Absolutely.
Not all debt is created equal, right? There is a point where if you had the option to settle your house loan versus using that money to invest, what would the ideal situation here be?
I always have the same mantra, which is what's the cost versus your benefit?
Mm-hmm.
The cost of your borrowing, of your loan, which is the cost of your loan, which is your interest rate, versus the benefit of using that same amount of money had you used it to settle your loan, what would it give you? So, for example, a very good example is account to EPF.
Mm-hmm.
EPF gives you 6-odd%, I mean, in the last few years. And your mortgage loan is charging you 4.5%. So you're actually in the money by not using your account to settle your loan.
And that's very important, right? Because right there, you're making a spread of 1.5%.
That's huge.
For most of us, what that basically means is your money is better off sitting in EPF and you paying your house loan separately.
Exactly. Unless it is causing you sleepless nights and, mm-hmm. you know, making you depressed because you don't like to be indebted to someone or to an institution, then yeah, by all means. But if it's not causing you that, again, it's a psychological issue, right?
It is.
It's categorizing where your money is. It's the same. It's still money. But is the cost versus the benefit that we need to remember?
Now, Joyce, we've gone quite far and wide in this episode. We've talked about Belanjawan Ku, we've talked about budgets, we've talked about where to start, and we've talked about property as well. Now, just before the break, we were talking about simplifying our financial lives, and we were talking about Marie Kondo, and I had an episode about applying the KonMari method to investments last week. In your opinion, how can we apply the Marie Kondo way to our financial lives?
Well, we started talking about very basic finances, which is actually savings and expenses. So I've always said that in that equation, the part where we can handle and control more is actually the expense part.
Okay.
Because how many hours can you work a day? How many jobs can you do? Right. Mm-hmm. The income part is kind of, well, is there.
Yep.
You get incremental increases in your salary every year. But the expense part is where you can apply this concept of tidying up, of being mm-hmm. organized. Hold any expense in your mind or in your heart and ask, does it give you joy?
Yeah.
You know? And joy not in the sense where it is short-term joy, but yeah. long-term joy.
Okay.
Because any expense that you have is usually just short-term joy. You have a new car and, you know, after a while you get kind of tired with it. You have a new handbag or a new pair of shoes. So does it give you long-term joy? If it doesn't give you long-term joy, then cut it down. And that immediately increases your savings.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've done in the last 1-2 years was I love my lattes. I've always loved my lattes.
Mm-hmm.
But it comes to a point where you have to, it was the easiest thing to cut out from my budget.
Right.
Instead of spending that 10 ringgit a day, I started spending started using it twice a week, but I used to enjoy those cups of coffee. And that's made a big difference to my personal budget over the last, I think it's been about 2 years now.
Fantastic.
That doesn't mean I don't drink mm-hmm. my coffee. I still love it.
Yes.
But you've just got to, like you said, expenses are the biggest thing within our control. And
exactly.
It's the easiest thing for us to play around with. That said, there are plenty of things that are out of our control, like bills and rent and in car installments and all of that. But of all the factors, this is the one we've really got to play around with to make it work. Really.
That's right. And change your vocabulary from I can't control my expenses to I can. Because
mm-hmm.
that actually shifts your mindset from inertia state to getting in charge state. So we need to take charge of our finances that way by telling it to our minds.
All right. A lot to work with here. Let us know what you think. What were your thoughts from this episode? Do you agree, disagree with anything we've said? Let us know on Twitter at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp at 018-789-8899. On that note, thank you for joining me today, Joyce. It was a great conversation and I hope to see you again soon. This was Ringgit & Sense, the show that's all about personal finance, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.